Back together again, you and I, Thursday style, December 5th, 2024, on Connecticut Today. I open the show with comments about unionized professors and their reactions to a new report examining the finances of the Connecticut State Colleges and Universities system. CBS News correspondent Jake Rosen joined us once again from West Palm Beach, Florida, with the latest on the Trump White House transition. Landmark Legal Foundation attorney and VP of Legal Affairs Mike O'Neill stopped by. He's one of our go-to guys to explain a major case before the U.S. Supreme Court concerning medical treatment for transgender youths. And of course, it's a Thursday, and that means only in Bridgeport.com blogger Lenny Grimaldi dropped by with all the buzz in the Park City, including the latest on the school board situation and the school superintendent's position. So yesterday we did part one of living in an alternate universe, and by that I mean we talked yesterday about the notion that this state equivalent of Medicaid that pays for the medical care of the children of illegals or undocumented people, whatever you want or whatever euphemism you want to use, was in the news yesterday, I should say, or a couple of days before that, because there's no firm grip on the cost, right? That was part one of our, hey, do they really care? Or are they just lying to us? We went over that story with a fine-tooth comb yesterday of the state saying, well, this husky from migrants, we're not really sure how much of it is being spent on what, whether the eligibility is what it should be, but hey, we'll get back to you in February or March or something like that. Okay, so I figure, well, that's the story we'll have on that for the rest of the week. But no, boys and girls, just when you think it's okay to think that some people in state government and state employees actually care about your tax dollars, well, guess what? They don't. Now, let me preface this with something. This is not about the profession of anybody. If you're good at what you do, you'll get hired. You'll have some modicum of success, one would think. But in most cases, especially in the private sector, Lord knows, I've seen this in the communications business for years, whether I worked in radio, TV, or in print. If the money isn't there, jobs, unfortunately, jobs get cut. It's bad. It's lousy. It sucks. And believe me, I've been on the receiving end of, hey, can you come to my office for a few minutes? I've had that said to me five or six or seven times over the past four decades I've been doing this. So trust me, I know what it's like to scramble and say, now what the you know what do I do? All right. You get on the phone. You figure out what you're doing. And I understand that. A lot of us have been through that multiple times, and almost every time, if you're decent, you kind of land on your feet. But you don't like the scramble. You don't like the initial nausea when you're sat down and said, hey, it's not. When you hear that magic phrase, it's not your performance, it's not you, it's the money. It's a slowdown in business, whatever. And people in my business have heard that, other businesses too. But again, we come to a story here where, I hate to say this, but I'll just come out and say it. Over and over and over again, you have, and God bless you state workers, I understand you do good jobs, just like a lot of us in the private sector. But there's this attitude, this not seeing the forest for the trees. There's this misreading of the room. Ah, we're indispensable. You can't talk about job cuts. Well, why not? Well, it's for the students. No, it's not. You don't want to lose your job. And that's okay. That's all right. How many millions of people every week are told, hey, sorry, our production is down, or those big orders didn't come through, or those contracts didn't come through, and, you know, whatever. Okay, I understand that. And you're probably out there saying, well, see, Paul, that's what's good about unions. Yeah, well, maybe, but sometimes unions have their heads in the proverbial sand. Now, what am I talking about here? Well, this has to do, again, thank you, Governor Ned Lamont, somebody who's not a career politician, who commissioned a reporter, said, hey, give us a top-to-bottom look at the Connecticut State Colleges and University System. Now, that does not include UConn. UConn is a standalone entity that's got its own problems. The UConn Foundation doesn't like to talk about how much money they get from who, even though they're raising it under state banner. So we're not talking about UConn. We're talking about Southern, WestConn, Central, Eastern, and some other colleges. So what's the controversy here? Well, we'll tell you about it coming back. But briefly, a new report says you got to cut staff. The thing's bleeding money, but oh, the staff people say, oh, no, you can't cut staff. Well, why not? Well, it's the children. It's the students. So the pressures that you and I and a lot of folks are facing every day, although not pleasant, I guess these people think they're insulated here. And again, I'm not talking about individual professors or instructors, but the stuff you hear out of the union's mouth, I mean, what is this, comedy? What are we, writing for SNL, trying to make it funny again? We'll tell you about what the unions say about how cataclysmic, you know, the world's going to end if some professors lose their jobs. Do you know that? The world is going to come crashing down. It'll be a smoldering heathen pile of evil if for some reason you take some jobs away. Oh, the humanity. And I hope you realize what you're seeing here, and it's good, actually. A lot of people say it's not. I say it is. We finally have a little bit of a reckoning here, and I got to tell you something. It really is thanks to Governor Lamont. Now, I know stuff is still expensive in this state. I get it. I understand it. Electricity, natural gas, all of our utilities are way too high. But one thing the governor has done, and I know a lot of you Republicans out there are going to be, you know, grinding your teeth and cursing me out and saying, well, why are you praising the governor? Because he's doing a good job with this. And whether it's paying down long-term debt, which, again, I know they're turning cartwheels because they paid a bit of it down. That's nice. There's a lot more to go. How about we continue that for the next 40 or so years? I probably won't be here. I don't think I'll be 40 years. I'll be 103. I don't think, maybe I will be. I don't know. I don't think I'll be doing this. Maybe I'll be filling in. Hey, Paul's filling in next week. He's still around. He's 103. Well, all right. He'll be wearing Depends during the show. Oh, man. But having said that, listen, we're at least on the right track here. And you know we're on the right track when the state unions are complaining. That's the canary in the coal mine. You know, there are certain indicators in life that you learn. One of those, what was that thing they used? Was that a butterball turkey or chickens? They had that pop-up thermometer. Remember that? Hey, when it pops up, the meat's cooked. There you go. You knew about it. Well, the more people complain about spending discipline in the state, why do I care? Because it keeps your taxes down, keeps my taxes down. The more people complain about the fact that, well, we don't have enough money, then you know it's working. You know it's working. Well, you know, if we don't spend money on this stuff, people are going to die in the streets. No, they're not. No, they're not. We don't have people dropping dead in the streets. And if they do, it's probably because one of them shot the other because they've been out of jail too quickly. But I digress. Faculty at the Connecticut State Colleges walk out in protest of a new report recommending, oh, my God, staff cuts. And again, I'm not sitting here cheering the fact, Pacelli wants to see people lose their jobs. No, that's not the point. But what I do want to see is what everybody else in Connecticut, what's Connecticut have? 3.4 million people? Of which 40 or 45,000 are very hardworking state employees, I would imagine. I've heard some stories about some other employees. But I mean, from state of Connecticut employees, by the way, not from anti-union people. But again, you have a scenario here where you have 40 or 45,000 people in the state. I'm sure many of you who are state employees do a good job. But how is it that 40 or 45,000, I guess if you count part-timers, it's 40,000 or whatever, 40, 45,000. How is it that they get the huge clout that they do in dictating state policy? I know, rhetorical question, because they vote. I get it. I understand that. Faculty at the Connecticut State Colleges and Universities walked out of the governing board's meeting Thursday morning in a planned protest of a new report recommending drastic cuts to the system after years of financial struggles. This didn't happen overnight. The Connecticut State University system, not UConn. UConn is a completely different and unique entity for what they do and what their mission is. But the state university system, Central Connecticut, Southern, Eastern, and Westcon, they've been bleeding money for years. Now, in the private sector, unfortunately, you would have had, you know, warnings, job cuts. In other words, the private sector would react to this, but taxpayers are expected to just bite the bullet. Holding signs that read, "Come to the table and listen to faculty and students, not consultants." Around 10 faculty members, boy, what a throng, huh? Around 10 faculty members walked out of Founders Hall at Central Connecticut State University a few minutes into a presentation of the independent assessment commissioned by the governor's budget and policy office. Yes, Ned Lamont, you may not like him on social issues. You love the guy on fiscal issues. It's a 194-page report authored by the National Center for Higher Education Management System. It found, for example, that Central Connecticut State University has consistently fallen short in addressing a dire financial situation, suggesting sweeping reforms in order for the system's long-term sustainability. John O'Connor, an associate professor of sociology at Central, after he walked out of the meeting, said, "I think faculty members of the community colleges, faculty members of the state universities, see this as an attack on students, an attack on faculty members, and an attack on our institutions." It's amazing, isn't it? When you get to the state level and the word is you got to spend less and save more. Oh, we're under attack. Incoming. Among the suggested reforms are system-wide cuts to staff to align employment levels with plummeting enrollment, which the report says is necessary to save on costs. There's fewer students attending there. So you tell me why. And I don't care whether it's a faculty member, whether it's an electrician, whether it's a plumber, whether it's a car or truck mechanic, whether it's an accountant. If the work isn't there, why are the employees there? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. John Paul in Bridgeport. John Paul, what's up?
Yes, a few minutes ago you were talking about live in Bridgeport, that a lot of these so-called homeless, they're laying in the street. They're probably shot or killed or something. But I have to tell you, I walk around downtown Bridgeport, and I found a dead body there one time.
Well,
so my question is to you, you know, this that... what's her name keeps promoting the shelter? Is it the shelter?
The Bridgeport Rescue Mission? Is that what
Rescue,
you're talking about?
Yeah. I called them. I told her, that's a small solution. Why doesn't the government come in and build places so they can have shelter? Really? I mean, not like a room or something, you know?
Well, John Paul, thank you. I mean, that's something that's been debated for years and years and years and years. How many tens, hundreds, billions of dollars has every level of government spent because, oh, we're going to cure the urban problems. We've been saying that since the 1950s. We've been saying that for about 75 years. How are we doing so far on that? You tell me. Matt in Fairfield. Matt, what's up with you?
Hey, Paul. Happy Thursday.
Thank you, sir.
Well, you know, the tail end of your chat on education seemed to center on higher education colleges. Mm-hmm. My experience with teachers and administration is more about the high school and grammar school level. But
sure.
Here's the point. These schools, many of them, never get audited because it's the children.
Yeah.
And they spend their monies like some other municipal department, meaning by the third quarter, we need to find out what we can spend the rest of the money on so we can sit down and tell the town,
yeah,
we've run out of cash in the third quarter. We need more.
And I've had supervisors. Yeah,
they really need it.
Yeah, Matt, I've had supervisors in this business say, make sure you spend all your money, because if you actually save your money, Matt, you won't get the money next year, right?
Right.
Right.
It's not that they need it for the kids. It's that they want it for more programs and to continue growing their program.
It's frustrating. And, Matt, this report says, you know, the state university system, not including UConn, the system is bleeding money. You got to do something.
Right. I'm sure there are parallels. But you know what? There is a guy who's run Shelton for a number of many years, and I knew him before he was the mayor.
Mm-hmm.
And I spoke to him sometime well afterwards, and I said, how did you get things in control?
Yeah.
And he said, I sat down at a table and talked to department heads with a pencil on the desk.
Yeah.
And he said, that included education. And I picked up the pencil and said, I want to see a purchase rec if it's even a pencil.
Sure. No, I get it. Matt, I have to go. Thanks. Appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, you have to get your handle on costs. It's pretty simple. All right, let's take you down to Florida now. West Palm Beach, CBS reporter, political correspondent Jake Rosen. Jake's been good enough to join us a few times pre-election, now post-election, watching from Mr. Trump's Florida White House there, I guess you could call it that, as the transition continues. Jake, it's Paul again. Good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, good afternoon, Paul. I'm good. How are you?
That's not too bad, not too bad. How's life in West Palm these days? Now, you've been down there a long time, so have you scouted out all the good eats? Because that's what I ask everybody. It's all about the food. Like, and I know you gotta save the receipts for the boys and gals there at CBS, but you've been scouting out the eats, haven't you?
I have. Unfortunately, as a Jersey kid, like, the Italian food down here does not match.
Really?
What I grew up with, you'd think, given the transplants, but it doesn't.
Yeah.
Trying to figure it out one meal at a time, right? But today was just one of those crazy days for me where, you know, you can Uber eat something to the hotel and just keep working.
That's it. So, yeah, you're working, and now I guess, Jake, we're at the situation where I'm sure Mr. Trump is hearing, you know, things from Susie Wiles and other things from other, you know, staff members and supporters saying, hey, cut bait with Hegseth. Don't cut bait with Pete Hegseth. Keep Ron DeSantis in case or maybe somebody else, Joni Ernst. So what is the latest you're hearing, Jake?
Well, the latest is, you know, a Trump advisor told CBS News that time is running out for Pete Hegseth to kind of prove himself, win some of these senators over in these meetings on Capitol Hill. He's still up there today, back-to-back days of him kind of appearing in this full court offense, really, not even just defense anymore. You know, we saw yesterday his mom went on Fox and Friends,
mm-hmm,
for kind of a, not necessarily scripted, but not a difficult interview, kind of explaining that very, you know, high profile and now kind of infamous email she sent to her son about his treatment of women.
Yeah.
You know, she defended his, and said that really she wrote an apology 2 hours after that, although no receipts were really provided on air or anything like that. And we've seen him say to reporters on the Hill, listen, I'm not going to answer questions from you. I'm not going to address anything publicly and continue, you know, what he calls like a circus and a public trial. But he said senators are asking him about some of these things privately, and that he wouldn't be on the Capitol Hill yesterday or today or going forward if Donald Trump didn't want him to be, kind of signaling, well, although we have not heard explicitly from Donald Trump yet about this, about where he stands.
His incoming chief of staff, she's really, from what I read from reporting at CBS and all the other networks, Jake, she's really trying to keep everybody's eyes on the prize here. And I guess from what I read with her previous experience, urging some of these nominations not to take up too much political capital, correct?
Yeah, and, you know, I think you have to remember how much capital it's going to take to overhaul the tax code, to enforce mass deportations, to do the things that Donald Trump ran on and won on. And that's going to take the political capital that they need among allies on Capitol Hill to then explain to their constituents around the country why these things matter, why they're important, and why they benefit them. I think most people don't know who a lot of these cabinet officials, especially not, you know, the RFKs or Tulsi Gabbards or maybe now Pete Hegseth, who they are. But you don't want to waste, you know, weeks fighting back and forth when some of these picks are extremely uncontroversial. And if anything, kind of conventional. Someone like Marco Rubio for Secretary of State, that is something, you know, a role that there have been no senators opposed to him. He is a senator, right? Kind of, they have to work with the balance of power, which is narrow for the Republicans in the House and the Senate. So they can't only pick people on Capitol Hill, but people who are basically locks to be confirmed, you know, there are only so many of those you can pick. And because he's kind of gone the outside on people like Tulsi Gabbard, RFK, Kash Patel, you know, some of the oxygen has been taken up by Pete Hegseth, but we forget that these people are also going to have their moment on Capitol Hill and have their meetings, and whether they can get, you know, through easily without these kind of back and forth we've seen over Matt Gaetz and Hegseth remains to be seen.
Jake Rosen is the guest. Couple more minutes. CBS political reporter covering the Trump transition. Mr. Trump has not spoken, Jake, correct? If I remember, post the election, are the Trump people telling you, are you asking them in the press corps, hey, is he going to do any sort of an open presser or open newser? Any inkling that he may take questions in a formal setting or not?
Not right now, although he is doing his first sit-down interview since winning the election with Meet the Press that will air in its entirety on Sunday on NBC News. That will be an opportunity for other reporters, obviously at a different network, to kind of press him on all the questions we have about what happened with Matt Gaetz and that withdrawal, and quite frankly, the selection of him in the first place. What happens with Pete Hegseth? Does he support him? What are his actual thoughts on someone like Ron DeSantis? You know, when there were some Congress people floating themselves for names about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, Trump aides and Trump were very fast to basically dismiss them publicly. That has not happened in the last 48 hours since this DeSantis news broke. So this will be really the first opportunity to hear all of that. Plus, frankly, you know, meeting with Elon Musk consistently. He's going to Paris right after that interview, I believe, to kind of go do something on the world stage, which he has not yet done since he won also. So.
Yeah, and Jake, finally, I see now a trickle of Democratic support suddenly popping up for this DOGE, this Department of Government Efficiency, you know, supposedly going to be headed up by Vivek Ramaswamy and Elon Musk. Kind of sounds like there are people coming out of the woodwork here, even on the Democratic side, who have maybe fancied this over the years, but now they feel they can actually talk on it. I mean, when I saw Bernie Sanders was for this, I said, well, okay, how about that?
Right, and it's really kind of more of the progressive branch, people like Ro Khanna, a congressman, who has really made himself available in the kind of the post-Biden dropping out fallout as a potential 2028 candidate for Democrats. People like Bernie Sanders have been outspoken about wasteful government spending, especially on things like the defense budget. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a way to parse that out, though, that doesn't necessarily fit with the Democrat worldview, which is mass firings on a bureaucratic level is not something that Bernie Sanders and Ro Khanna want, right? They want a rolling back of defense spending, a rolling back of wasteful spending in the government, which I think many congresspeople may come out in favor of. But what Vivek Ramaswamy and Elon Musk have said they're going to do are very different than just the thought of cutting spending, right?
Sure, sure. Finally, how are your, Jake, how are your USB cables and your power cables holding out? They okay? None of them broke? None of them frayed? No?
We're all good. There's a Target down the street, and I'm lucky to be here with a great crew of CBS colleagues who are, you know, we're holding down the fort here, and, you know, we've got 5 or 6 more weeks left through the holidays.
Oh, man.
Keep on chugging down here.
Wow, yeah. Well, having done a bunch of sports games on the road play-by-play, right, I get to a city. Oh, my God, I forgot this. Oh, wait, there's a Staples. There's a Target.
So yep, that was me. That was me on Tuesday night. So right. We're all human, right?
Excellent. Jake Rosen. Jake, be good. We'll talk down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Paul.
All right, bye-bye. Jake Rosen there, good guy, CBS News. What'd he say, another 5 weeks, 6 weeks in West Palm? And to decode what went on yesterday at the U.S. Supreme Court, our buddy, our pal, Mike O'Neill, Landmark Legal Foundation attorney and vice president of legal affairs. Mike, it's Paul. Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm well, Paul. How are you?
Good, good, good. Okay, so Mike, if you can encapsulate what happened here. Now, it was reported as an argument as to what a law in Tennessee regarding what they call gender-affirming care. How did this end up at the Supreme Court and why?
Sure. This is a law that was passed by enacted by the Tennessee legislature that banned the administration of puberty blockers and hormone replacement therapies for teenagers, for minors. And it was a law enacted, and then it was challenged. This is immediately challenged by an individual who was prohibited from receiving these, the teenager who had standing in it, was now prohibited from receiving these. This individual was alleging that this was a medical necessity, that there was a medical need for these drugs to be administered, and went through the federal, filed a lawsuit alleging that this violated the Equal Protection Clause of the United States Constitution via the 14th Amendment, went through the district court, went through the appellate court, and then, of course, migrated up to the Supreme Court. So it was a merits-based argument. But, of course, these things can go pretty quickly when you're talking about a facial challenge to a law. There's not a long, drawn-out trial. There's not a lot of facts in dispute. You're just simply alleging that the law, as enacted by the Tennessee legislature, violates the constitutional rights of this individual. And that's how it migrated up there. Of course, the case is U.S. versus Scrimeti. This is probably, Paul, the most high-profile case of this term. Normally, the past few years, we've had a lot of high-profile cases. It seems like I'm always talking about some big high-profile case. This is probably, standing aside, this is more of a typical, normal kind of session for the U.S. Supreme Court. Really, the past few years where we've had these big, high-profile cases, abortion, the Trump immunity, the presidential immunity, these sorts of cases, those are really exceptions to the rule. So I would say pretty clear consensus from most folks that this is the most high-profile case before the court this term, certainly with the largest implications from a societal standpoint.
Yeah, so, Mike, basically what's happening here, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is not rendering any value judgment on whether or not transgender care should be administered. This is the, as you say, the constitutionality of this law and whether it's violating rights. There's no judgment here as to, per se, the administering of what's referred to as gender-affirming care, right?
Right. And essentially what this comes down to, and this is what focused on oral arguments last time, is what level – now, remember, when we're talking about constitutional rights, we're talking about what level of scrutiny is a court supposed to subject to. Now, when there's certain levels here as lawyers and courts and judges subject laws passed by states or laws passed by legislatures, whether you're going to subject to a law to a certain strict scrutiny or a rational basis scrutiny. Now, what the advocates against the law, the advocates for the transgender rights individuals, were saying that this law should be subject to strict scrutiny. And that means unless you can rationalize a very that the law is substantially related to advancing an important government interest, the law should be struck down as violating the constitutional right. If it's a rational basis, it's a lesser threshold to cover, and it's more likely that the court's going to say, okay, that law passes constitutional muster. So there was a lot of back and forth about that. Really, what we're coming back down to, Paul, is when you see this and you're able to discern from the oral arguments, there were some similarities to the Dobbs decision, oral arguments, where you had Justice Kavanaugh and Roberts. You had Justice Kavanaugh kind of falling back on some of the things he was talking about during the abortion arguments and saying, well, wait a minute, are judges really the best suited for this, to make this decision? You guys here on one side are giving good arguments, on the other side are giving good arguments. Shouldn't this issue be really left to the legislatures to decide, kind of along the lines of the abortion issue? That's where Justice Kavanaugh looked like he was coming down on it.
So I was just going to ask you, Mike, as we wrap up on this, so that's what it was, that the major thing that popped out to you yesterday from the oral arguments?
Well, I think the major takeaway is you saw six justices, and if you want to call them the conservative justices, expressing skepticism as to the challenges. And they were saying it looked like the six conservative, quote unquote, conservative justices were going to say, hey, look, this is an issue for a state legislature to decide. Each one of them had some different rationalities.
Yeah.
Alito said, got into immutable characteristics. Thomas got into whether it's the sex discrimination, whether it was a valid argument. Chief Justice Roberts got into the decision about, hey, judges should be not making the medical questions here aren't as settled as maybe the advocates challenging the law. We're trying to advocate. We're saying, look, that this isn't might not necessarily be as necessary for medical treatment for these individuals, so that the medicine, the medical questions were unsettled. So you saw the six conservative justices appearing to side on the favor of the state legislature, and the three liberal, quote unquote, liberal justices probably on the other side. So I would say guarded optimism that this law is going to be upheld as constitutionally valid. That's kind of the big takeaway.
Yeah. And Mike, one final thing just popped into my head. I hope you don't mind if I spring this on you now with Mr. Trump about to take office, and you're hearing more and more rumblings about Sonia Sotomayor and dealing with her diabetes. And just for the record, I'm a diabetic, too, so I know what she's going through.
Yeah.
There's got to be a short list, Mike, somewhere of what could be another appointment, believe it or not, by Mr. Trump. So are there any, in your circles, have you heard of any justices that might fill the bill here? Now she may stay for the 4 years, who knows? Sotomayor choose to step aside, any rumblings you're hearing or not?
I'm sure that there are some individuals. I would think that there are individuals, you know, there are certain names of justices that are floated about. You hear the names on the Fifth Circuit. Maybe there's a couple of district court judges that, again, you have to think of a profile. You're going to want somebody who's already shown that they're going to be that they're going to be strict constructionists, that they're going to be constitutionalists, originalists, that they've shown that they're willing to step outside the box and maybe say, hey, look, the size and scope of the administrative state has gone too far. Express willingness, you know, been more aligned philosophically with your Justices Thomas and your Justices Alito, probably younger, somebody in the early 50s. I haven't heard any specific names.
Okay.
I don't think Justice Sotomayor would be likely, though. It's funny, you mentioned her name. I understand she does have some health, but she might have some health issues she's facing, but I don't think she'd be willing to relinquish that seat really easily here.
Yeah.
If anything, Paul, it'd be more likely, and again, I don't know anything specific. I have no specific knowledge of any of this. It'd be more likely that a Justice Thomas or a Justice Alito, for example, is seeking to retire in the next few years, knowing that their seat would be preserved by somebody with a similar judicial philosophy.
Interesting. Mike O'Neill, Landmark Legal Foundation. Mike, as always, great stuff. Take care, and I'm sure we'll talk down the line. Thanks, Mike.
Take care, Paul. Bye-bye.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye. From the aforementioned onlyinbridgeport.com, Lenny Grimaldi here. I don't think Lenny's in West Palm Beach. Lenny, you're not hanging with you-know-who down at West Palm, are you?
Not anymore. I'm back. It was a good trip.
Oh, come on. Did you? No, you're joking, right?
He offered me a job on a watch.
Okay. No, come on. No, wait a minute now. I need the real answer. You're kidding, right, or not?
Well, why should I go there when I go to Manhattan?
No wonder you couldn't come on a couple of days. All right, I get you.
Yes, I couldn't come on for a couple of days. Yes, I was in Manhattan. Yes.
Oh, you were in Manhattan. Okay, that's what they're calling West Palm Beach now, Manhattan. Okay. Yeah. All right.
This is a lot closer, Uncle Paulie.
Yeah. Lenny, you're breaking up a little bit, so if you can get on top of the phone a little bit, I'd appreciate it. So I see
can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can hear you.
Okay,
yeah, good. Now I can hear you because I guess you're on a better cell in West Palm Beach. But seriously, what is the school leadership? This is your lead story here, I see, on OIB. School leadership here. So is Carmela Levy David ever coming back, Lenny, or not?
Nope. Don't see it happening.
Yeah.
Right now, so she was on board for about a year. It was no pick in the park for her, you know, at all. She had a lot of issues. The union leadership didn't like her. The teachers didn't like her. They had a lot of complaints. She had battles with the school board. And, you know, this is kind of the story I have. It's kind of a study in fire and ice. She brought the fire, and then you have Royce Avery, Dr. Royce Avery, who is now in an acting position, you know, a cool head, very thoughtful, circumspect. People seem to like him and what he's doing. You know, his communication skills are stronger. And so a couple of weeks ago, the Board of Education put him in charge of the school district on an acting basis after she took him, quote unquote, leave.
Yeah.
It saw the writing on the wall. She wasn't going to last long. So effectively what they offered her is this: listen, we'll pay you to the end of the school year.
Yeah.
And if you resign. So you know, what I'm hearing is nothing's definitive on it, but she's probably going to take the deal. She hasn't said decisively what she's going to do, but either way, she's not coming back.
How long is her contract, though, Lenny? So they said to the end of this school year, they'll pay her if she resigns. Is the contract longer than that? Can she say no and take him to court? What are the mechanics of this?
Well, she can. I mean, she's got a really good lawyer from Ameritown Abuse, who's an expert in labor law.
Mm-hmm.
But she's got contract violations. She moved out of the district.
Oh.
She moved to Delphin. So, I mean, she's got school officials, board of education officials, and so on, say she has violated the contract.
Oh.
In a number of ways, including moving out of the district. And so they've told her, we'll pay you to the end of the year. If you don't want that deal, you know, she could challenge it. I don't know if Busey is going to advise her to do that.
Mm.
He's a really good lawyer. But, you know, maybe she just takes the money at the end of the year and walks away. But either way, she's not going to come back.
How many years were left on the deal at the end of this school year, Lenny?
Well, they're always done, I think, by state law, like 3 years, three-year process.
Yeah.
The school leaders get. And so she's got some, like, one and some change.
Okay.
So that's how it works. But she's got contract violations, and that's part of the issue. And, you know, the Board of Education feels that, you know, they're in a pretty good place and what they've offered her. And, she has a recourse of going to, you know, challenging in court, but I don't think she's going to win.
Now, you mentioned that Mr. Avery has better communication skills, and I seen that happen in my professional life over and over again. But what about philosophies? Are Mr. Avery and Carmela Levy David parallel on philosophies? Was it just, Lenny, from what you hear, a communications thing? Is he going to continue to try and continue what she started or not?
Oh, I think on a few things, yes. But right now, her problem was she had 9 bosses to deal with.
Yeah.
School board, 9 members. She couldn't get a majority, a small majority she had, but she had a very vocal minority in the school board against her.
Mm.
So basically, it's his show right now. He's got stuff that he wants to do. He's got a budget deficit he wants to close. He's got some people that he's examining, but maybe he'll let go. He wants to be active with the state legislature to try to get more, you know, state dollars into the school system. Yeah. But I think he's got to have his own philosophy about moving forward. And I think one big philosophy is that, you know, she had difficulty communicating. She would just do things unilaterally,
yeah,
and not run it past the school board first. And, you know, I think what he's trying to do is repair those kinds of relationships, communication, you know, with the district staff, the teachers. You've got 600 teachers,
yeah,
who participated in a CEA poll and expressed zero confidence in her leadership. So he's really working on trying to embrace the classroom teachers, say, you know, I'm with you. You know, we're a team together. We're going to communicate together. And, you know, you're going to hear stuff from me, you know, first before you hear from somebody else.
Lenny Grimaldi, only in Bridgeport.com. I remember this gentleman, Joe Gormley, Lenny, a long career, former judge, attorney. And this I didn't know. He was the first chief state's attorney. He's passed away at, what, 92?
Yeah. And so when I, believe it or not, I go back that far, right? So he was the first chief state's attorney. Joe Gormley, 92, he passed away a few days ago. He was a Bridgeport lawyer. He was a state judge. But, yes, he was appointed the first chief state's attorney.
Mm.
And so when I became a young scribe, he was the first chief state's attorney, and had a heck of a background. Notre Dame University's law school, a couple of law practices in Bridgeport. He was appointed by, at the time, the way it worked in 1973, I think it was,
wow,
General Assembly passed legislation creating a central prosecution office. And this would be the chief state's attorney's office.
Yeah.
And at the time, it was appointed by the Connecticut Chief Justice of the Connecticut Supreme Court, appointed the first chief state's attorney in 1973.
Interesting. Before we get to your former boss, interesting. The Bridgeport Police Department, Lenny, they're kind of glomming on to the fact that the people love crime whodunits here, and there is the latest adventures, Lenny, of the Park City Confidential. How about that?
Yeah, that's part of the outreach that Chief Porter has. You know, he's been the best chief, you know, in my lifetime.
Yeah. He's
communicating with the community, and there's also more tools, you know, that you have today that he's utilizing.
Mm-hmm.
And so for cold cases, he is putting together, you know, 5 and 10 minute videos of cold cases to help, you know, reach out to the community to help break these cold cases, settle it, you know, crack through the information that we need to settle this. So, you know, if you go to the Bridgeport Police Department Facebook page or any of their social media pages, you can see these videos that give a lot of background. They're well done, and they're interesting. First time that I've seen anyone do this in a local police department. Say, hey, we've got some cold cases,
and
we need the public help. And so it's kind of right after. It's like these mini documentaries giving some background on these cases, how long it's been, and you know, if you hear any information about this, you know, please let us know.
And Lenny, finally, in about the minute we have left, your old boss, Mr. Trump, trying to push Pete Hegseth through, and another few people of his cabinet picks and staff. But I was talking to Jake Rosen from CBS a little while ago. You may have heard it. He himself has kind of avoided the microphones. I guess he's going to be on Meet the Press this weekend. But what are your thoughts on what you see from the transition, Lenny?
Yeah, he's got a lot going on. You know, I think that's part of the reason he's putting a lot of pieces together. You know, it's interesting. He's poaching a lot of members of the House of Representatives. That could be a little dicey, you know, because there's not a big majority there.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think he's got Susie Wiles, and she's really smart.
Yeah.
And, you know, at least for now, you know, you got to pick your battles. You got to pick your spots.
Yeah.
You know, he'll see how far he can push it. And then if it's not there, he's got backup. He's got other people. Can he get to the same place? It's like the situation with the attorney general.
Yeah.
You know, can I get to the same place that I want with a different person? That's ultimately what he's going to do. Yeah, I'll push you for a while.
Okay.
You know, if I got a backup, we'll plug somebody else with it to get to the same place.
Okay. So you're not going to end up in the speechwriter's office or working communications. See, you're not going to D.C. is what you're telling me.
No, we talked about it. I said, what am I going to do? I got to see the White House press corps seals every day. You know, I'm flattered, but you know, I like Connecticut. I don't want to. I'm not a D.C. guy.
Okay.
I'll take a walk, and, you know,
every time
you want to talk, let's just talk.
All right, there you go. Lenny Grimaldi, only at Bridgeport.com. Lenny, thank you. Have a great week, and we'll talk down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thanks a lot. Okay.
All right, there you go. Traffic and weather together. Lenny, not going to Trump Volume 2 on WICC.